From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. The Fort Myers Police Department reports this week that crime in the city is down overall for the first half of 2015. However, unsolved shootings, including the death of a 5-year-old boy last fall and a 12-year-old girl who survived 3 gunshot wounds earlier this month, is raising concerns among residents. We'll explore community police relations along with a recent proposal for a gun buyback program in Fort Myers. Plus, the U.S. Supreme Court's landmark decision on same-sex marriage this past June has created a perception among many that the fight for LGBT equality has been won. Advocates say that's not the case. A look at the status of LGBT rights in Florida. First, this news. This is Gulf Coast Live from WGCU News. I'm John Davis. Thanks for joining us. Same-sex marriage became legal in Florida in January following a U.S. District Court judge's ruling that the state's gay marriage ban was unconstitutional. Also this year, Florida lawmakers officially removed a gay adoption ban from the books, and the U.S. Supreme Court made a landmark ruling in June that bars states from banning same-sex marriage. This has created a perception among many that the fight for LGBT equality has been won. But advocates say issues ranging from parental rights to employment and housing discrimination remain. A look at the current status of LGBT rights in Florida later this hour. But first, the Fort Myers Police Department's semi-annual uniform crime report was released this week. The numbers show a 9.7% reduction in overall crime for the first 6 months of 2015. That continues what's been a consistent reduction on crime since 2012. However, unsolved shootings in recent months have raised concerns among Fort Myers communities. Last October, 5-year-old Andrew Faust Jr. was killed by a stray bullet. 12-year-old Luxury Vance survived 3 gunshot wounds earlier this month while standing outside her aunt's Fort Myers home. And 2 months ago, a 17-year-old boy and his uncle were found dead outside an apartment complex. These violent crimes have prompted Fort Myers City Councilwoman Terrellyn Watson to propose a gun buyback program. We'll explore the efficacy of such programs, and we'll also be exploring efforts to improve community police relations in the city of Fort Myers, involving the Fort Myers Police Department, Mount Hermon Ministries in Dunbar, and Lee Memorial Health System. Joining me now is Fort Myers City Councilman Johnny Streets, who represents Ward 2 of the city. Streets has also worked with the Housing Authority of the City of Fort Myers and the Lee County Housing Authority. Before that, Streets served 26 years as a law enforcement officer with the Fort Myers Police Department. Councilman Streets, welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Good afternoon. Pleased to be here.
We're also speaking with EMSC Aurelyn Tula Coates. She's a manager of diversity and language services at Lee Memorial Health System, where her role serves not just in the capacity of cultural competency training for staff, but also as a point of contact for Southwest Florida's diverse communities. She was a recipient of a FACE Award for Education in 2011. Born in Nigeria, she was raised in Queens, New York, and before coming to Lee Memorial, spent time teaching English in a small rural village in Japan. EMSC has also been involved in an initiative to better understand and improve police-community relations in Fort Myers. EMSC, thanks for your time today as well.
Thank you.
We also invited the Fort Myers Police Department to join this conversation, but they did respectfully decline. But we do want to hear from listeners. Connect with our guests with your phone calls to 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org. Post comments and questions on our Facebook page at WGCU Public Media, or join the live Twitter chat using the hashtag GulfCoastLive. And Councilman Streets, I wanted to begin with you. First of all, take us back to your time working with the Fort Myers Police Department. In what capacities did you serve?
Well, I started off as a patrol officer on the streets of the city of Fort Myers. And I became a canine officer with the city of Fort Myers for several years. And I was promoted to the rank of sergeant, and I became a sergeant for many years, and I became the command of community policing in the City of Fort Myers Housing Authority, or the City of Fort Myers Housing Development.
And in your 26 years as a Fort Myers Police Department law enforcement officer, you know, how would you characterize the relationship between the department and communities in the city, particularly African-American communities?
Well, during my tenure, I would say it was much better than it is now. And that's not to criticize or condemn anybody. I think you have to work at maintaining certain things. Again, I say that was then, this is now. So we look at it's a different era, different people, but sometimes we have the same issues. And if we don't work to correct those conditions about those issues, sometimes we have problems. And you can see where we are today, you know. So we still have a lot of work to do. I just think we got to get more people involved and being more personalized into their delivery of services to the community, both police and the community.
And you kind of led right into my next question there. I mean, do you think maybe some of the tension that is there now that maybe wasn't as prevalent when you were on the force has a lot to do with, you know, momentum that's been gaining nationally with, you know, these high profile police killings of black men that have been taking place?
Well, I don't know if you can link some of the killings to the police department and relationships at all. Again, we have to break down in the family. We have drugs. We have disputes. We're not being able to resolve some of our issues in the community. And what adds on to that is that you have maybe some police officers who are not well-versed or not, versed on the history of a community and interacting with people and engaging in people to recognize that, you know, don't just drive by problems. Sometimes you can recognize a problem and try to intervene. So it works both ways. But you know, I'm like anybody else. I'm tired of violence. I'm saddened to hear this morning we had a lot of violence in Virginia where two reporters were killed. I mean, come on, what's going on here? So surely we got too many guns in the hands of wrong people.
I had mentioned that, you know, crime in the city has been on a consistent decline since 2012. But what about these recent shootings that I had mentioned? Does this remain a significant concern for law enforcement and for public officials like yourself?
Well, it's always a concern of mine and other public officials and the police department because we do take it personal because it affects all of us. It affects business. It affects our citizens. It affects developers who want to come into this area because they'll hear those things. Now, my concern is simply this, is that, again, being involved, being engaged, knowing the history of a community, what police officers are, what are their goals and objectives are in the community. So there's several variances that we have to really look at, in preventing some of these issues. But guns, you know, one of the most things that we look at now when we talk about guns that even in my career that people didn't look at as much as they're looking at now is the fact that some people are dealing with depression and mental illness. So you have to look at from a holistic approach of why we're having these concerns.
Right. And I had mentioned earlier this month your fellow city council member, Talon Watson, held a press conference where we heard from some of the victims of recent gun violence in the city and their family members. And during that conference, Councilwoman Watson proposed introducing a gun buyback program in the city. As I understand, broadly speaking, that would involve, you know, some sort of a financial exchange for folks turning in guns. Let me know your thoughts on that program. Is that something that you would support?
Well, first of all, I'd like to go back, if I may, and say hello to Yemensi, whom I know very well, and I appreciate.
Yes, I wanted to say that, too.
Okay.
I want to go ahead and say working with us and see that's reaching across the table and extending an olive branch for someone who can help us with her background. But we go back to the gun buyback program. I've been involved. The department has been involved in several gun buyback programs several years ago as a police officer. Some folks may say it's a knee-jerk reaction or it's a feel-good thing, but I look at it very seriously. If we could just take one gun off the street, get one gun from someone, you never know what this may have prevented. There are several reasons why I support the programs, and I don't worry so much about the financing it, because I think you've got private entities. I think in certain issues that the city puts up money, but also is that we have what we call neighborhood improvement funds. It's not a whole lot of funds from each council person. So, you know, and you have the churches. We did it at churches, and we did get some guns. Now, if you think that, you know, the person that we're concerned about that are carrying guns on the street are going to turn in their gun, that may not happen. But there's other issues that concerns me, and my experience has taught me that, you know, if you got an elderly person that they have grandkids coming to visit, they may want to get that gun out of the house. So this is an opportunity to say, oh, well, you know, we don't want any tragedies. And that's one issue. But one of the things that was so dear to me that got my heart in my career as law enforcement is that during Thanksgiving and Christmas time, I had to respond as a supervisor to many suicides. And what I meant by that is that we had older people who felt that they were disconnected from their family, and during those times they felt all alone, and they had this old 22 or whatever in the house, a rifle, and sometimes they took their life, but that's another issue there that I think families need to come close together to look at. But anytime you're removing a gun, you know, from someone who may have a mental illness or may be angry about somebody, I think there's always an opportunity. Like I said, if we prevent one, you know, it's worth it. But the fact that you're doing it because you care, not doing it because you're trying to make a statement, but because you care, and you know, you don't want any tragedies if you can prevent them. So that's my thing, it's about prevention.
Right. Well, Councilman Streets, do you remember the last time the city had a cash for guns or gun buyback program in place?
I don't know. I don't remember the last time I remember being involved in it. I can't remember when that was. But there were also programs, not necessarily law enforcement, other private entities asked people if they wanted to turn in their old guns, no question asked. It wasn't done under the auspices of the police department, but there were organizations that said, you know, if you wanted to bring your gun, you could to a certain location. Now, there was perhaps maybe law enforcement personnel to make sure that when these guns arrived at a location that there were safety standards that were in place that, you know, have someone not shoot anybody. Because some of these guns we got that came off the street were still loaded. Some of the ammunition had corroded in the mm-hmm. weapon. So, again, you know, it's not just what the police department has done, but some other entities have taken the lead and say, well, this is what we're going to do if anybody want to get rid of some of their old weapons or something. So I look at it from a standpoint that, you know, if someone in my community asked me to look at something and I think it's worth looking at, I think we need to look at it.
All right. Well, following some unsolved and high-profile cases of gun violence in the city of Fort Myers, we're exploring solutions being considered and implemented to address issues of gun violence and to improve police-community relations. We're speaking with former Fort Myers Police Department officer and current City Councilman Johnny Streets, Edley Memorial Health Systems Manager of Diversity and Language Services, Yemisi Olorantula Colts. Coats, rather, excuse me. Listeners can connect with our guests. Add your comments and questions to the conversation by calling 1-877-GCU-TALK. That's 877-428-8255. Send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org or follow the live Twitter chat using the hashtag GulfCoastLive. And, you know, as we're all aware, the Fort Myers Police Department's Chief Doug Baker was fired recently over claims that he'd lied to investigators looking into what occurred with the wrongful arrest of NFL player and former Cape Coral High School football star Nate Allen. Was Baker's removal the right call to make?
Are you asking me or are you asking the message?
Yes.
Okay. I'm asking you both, I suppose.
It was the right call. The city manager made that determination to terminate the contract of the police chief, and with that, we're moving forward in a new direction.
And interim police chief who has taken over now made his first media appearance this week. You know, and the hiring of a permanent replacement chief won't occur until a new city manager replaces Bill Mitchell, who's going to be retiring at the end of next month. Are you concerned about how these changes in leadership could impact police community relations, or do you think this is going to go over pretty smoothly overall?
Well, I think from go ahead, Yumesi.
Go ahead, Yumesi.
Thank you, Mr. Street. Yeah, I mean, for me, in terms of the project that we worked on, and it was a collective. It was a collective of involvement, and in terms of that community project that you talked about early on, and Chief Dennis was a part of that project. And a very integral part of that project at the time and continues to be. And so from my perspective, where it stands for this project, I think it's actually going to help, since he was a part of it from its initial thought or inception last year, December in 2014. So from where I stand in terms of this project, I think it would be a help from where I stand. I'm not sure how others may think, but I feel like it's an easier transition since you've been part of it.
All right. And Yumesi, let's talk more, you know, specifically about this project. I don't know exactly when you got on board with it, but from what I understand, it really came out of that tragic shooting death of the 5-year-old boy last October. And that's really kind of how it got started with Pastor Dr. William Glover with Mount Hermon Ministries getting in touch with the police department.
Yes, I wasn't a part of those initial conversations. Former Chief Baker and others, other church pastors, they had a meeting sometime in the fall in 2014. And out of that meeting came out the need for cultural competency training, or at the time it was termed diversity training. And when I got in, it's more toward about cultural competency training, which Mr. Streets alluded to, which is very important, understanding the culture that you are policing or you are caring for. That is crucial, and crucial knowledge in providing exceptional care or exceptional policing. But I got involved around December, and that's when we started interest meetings, inviting leaders to kind of frame it in a sense of what it would look like. And when I came in, I said it's important that we hear from the people. You know, there's a lot of statistics. That's great. But it's nothing like knowledge hearing from the people on the ground. And that's when we did a community focus group day, where prior to that, we trained people, community leaders, a lot of pastors, and police officers were also involved, and also serving agencies as well. And we did a training at NOVA. Trained them how to facilitate. They had their questions, focus group questions, and they went out and did the facilitating of these community focus groups. And they were held at the same time, the same questions being deployed, and people in the community were invited to come and attend and give their responses to the questions. So the questions were researched and analyzed based on what is going on nationally, some of what is going on locally, and so they were vetted, the questions prior. So I've been doing a lot of research and looking at what is going on nationally, how are other cities handling certain problems or interactions between police and the community, all of those things. So those questions were vetted, and throughout the process, the Fort Myers Police Department was very involved throughout the process. And right now, at the stage that we're in, once we've completed the community focus group day, we have the results from the focus group, the responses from the people, and what we're doing is partnering, hopefully looking forward to partnering with FGC to kind of help us to decipher the data. It's a lot of data. We have like 30 focus group sessions, a lot of information. And also the police officers did a survey, similar question type in a survey form. And we had about 120 participants from the Fort Myers Police Department that participated in the survey. And so their responses were quite telling. And from what I've read from the community, responses were quite telling, very comparable in terms of how they feel. And so right now we're just now gathering the data and analyzing the data. That's where we at this stage. And looking forward to the future, taking that data and doing something that is tailored to the community, community at large tailored to policing the community rather than doing something that is generic. So this allows it to be more custom-based. And as Mr. Streets stated earlier, the whole holistic point of view, he's absolutely correct. You know, the Center for Disease Control talks about the social determinants of health. Social determinants of health has to do with gun violence, has to do with mental illness, it has to do with psychosocial, all the economics, all of those things. So just as healthcare is looking at the patient in a holistic way, we also, in our community policing and how we engage our community, we do need to look at it in a holistic way because the answers are not that simple. It's much more complex because there's a lot more at stake, a lot more involved. And looking at cities like Far Rockaway City, they're now focusing on community policing. That's nothing new. That's something that was done prior, but now they're bringing it back because they're realizing that the interaction to create that trust, you know, there's some mistrust. And so how do we gain back that trust? So I believe community policing is crucial, but in order to do that, we need to have an understanding of the community we're policing and vice versa. And I think that will be helpful, hopefully, in the long run. This is a long-standing project. It's not a quick fix. It's going to take time, and it's going to take involvement of all parties. This involves all of us. And so I look forward to what that will lead into and what will develop once we analyze the data.
All right. And any timeline, do you think, on when you'll have some of that data analyzed? Or have you been able to look at any of it now? I mean, just anecdotally, have you noticed any kind of themes that have emerged from this direct community feedback?
I have. I have been able to look at some of the data. One of the things that we did do was at the day of the community focus group day, we did like a little survey, kind of like a teaser, and I dropped in some demographic data in there, and then also questions about the view of policing in the community. And what was interesting, which is probably nothing new because this is national as well, is that when I controlled for age and view of policing within the community, the age demographics between 18 and 29, 48% disagreed with the way that Fort Myers Police Department polices the community, 48%. And so that was an interesting demographic, the 18 to 29-year-olds. And then also, that was probably the largest thing. And then the less than 18-year-olds, 40% disagreed. Whereas when you go, as you go up in the age category, as you go up into the 30s to 49 and 50 to 64 and the older than 65, they were more neutral. They weren't as negative about their opinion with the police. So that was quite telling and interesting, and some opportunities because there's a lot of differences today when we look at just in the world today. Technology, information moves quickly. Like Mr. Streets alluded to, this is a different time. This is a different era. And so we need to move with the times and apply new things that will engage the community, particularly our young community as well, so that he can feel a part, and also the police. You know, it has to be, we have to work together. That's the only way that we can improve this community is by working together.
And when it comes to, you know, cultural competency training, particularly for officers, were you involved in developing a curriculum there, or is that something that's still happening?
That is something that's still happening. Once the data is fully analyzed,
sure,
we're going to use that information to create cultural competency training for police officers, definitely, and looking to also communicate, do cultural competency training with the community as well. I think it needs to be both. It's going to be different. It's going to definitely be different. But using that information, that is what will help realize that training. And, you know, cultural competency training, you got to talk about bias, you know. Biases at play, you know, on both ends. And oftentimes it does come at play, particularly in stressful situations. And so how do we deal with that? How do we address that when biases comes up? That's one of the things that I focus on and talk about in my work at Lee Memorial. And so we will be working on developing something like that. But one of the things that I do want to note is that when we did do the community focus group day, overarching comments were they were happy that they had a platform to speak.
Right.
As a matter of fact, Mr. Streets, your daughter was involved. She was a facilitator. She was awesome. And
yes,
so
you're
welcome. they wanted the opportunity to just speak, just to share in a safe environment. In a safe environment to get their thoughts out. That was very important. So, you know, this is very grassroots, but yet academic in a sense, but it's also very grassroots because the solution lies with the people. That's what I believe. The solution lies with the people, and they had some great ideas in how to improve relationships between police and the community.
Right. Well, you know, and I should also note, you know, you mentioned there were some 30 of these sessions going on at 16 different locations. I know there was at least one that was specifically geared towards younger residents. So really, you know, meeting people where they are and getting them in an environment where they can speak comfortably and candidly has got to be a huge part of it as well.
Absolutely. It's always, and it's telling that the information that you get, there's a lot of nuggets, a lot of eye openers, and it was, I must say, I have to highlight our facilitators. Our facilitators were amazing. I mean, they had to sacrifice their Saturday to spend 5 hours learning how to facilitate because, to do a focus group, you need training. So you just don't go out there and just say a question and expect a you have to be able to engage the people. You're going to have to be able to keep control of the session. So I applaud all the facilitators, which was about 20 of them, 20 plus of them, for the time and the effort that they put into doing these sessions in the community. They were awesome. They're a great extension and part of the team.
Okay. And I don't mean to, you know, derail what we're talking about with semantics here, but I have heard you say in previous interviews that when discussing this, you tend to stay away from terms like sensitivity training. Why is that?
I don't like the word sensitivity. I think that's just, this is my view. What I want to get at, it's not about sensitivity in my, not saying that it's not fully about sensitivity. It's more about cultural competency, and then the understanding will come. I feel like when we focus on sensitivity, we're not focusing on the real thing. Okay, what is really going on? Why do you have a problem with me? Or why do you have a problem with this?
Right, and, like it's still us, them, instead of a we.
Right, yeah. That's correct. Mm-hmm. And it's about a we. And diversity has moved into inclusion. We're living in a very diverse world. And so we have to be able to have culturally competent and understand how we can communicate with each other. How can we engage each other? I feel like the word sensitivity is very polarizing, and it doesn't get at the issue. And then when you say sensitivity, automatically the people go against it. They shut down. But when you, I like to come from a different angle, and I do talk about bias. I definitely talk about bias. I hit at home about that. I don't hide or cover that up, because that's what it really boils down to. It's bias. And Harvard University has a wonderful tool called the Implicit Association Test. Well, it measures people's bias towards blacks, towards Hispanics, towards the LGBT community, towards women. A great tool, and it's online and it's free if you want to go and look at it. And that's getting at the core. Okay, what is the issue? Why do I feel this way? And then once you understand the why, then you can get into the change and become more cultural competent and be more understanding. And then you improve communication, which then improves the interaction. I just don't prefer, me personally, I just don't like the word sensitivity, because it alarms people, and I can't get the work that I'm trying to get at.
All right. right. And you have touched on this a little bit earlier about this, you know, link between health and environment. But I mean, does Lee Memorial Health System, you know, fully support what you're doing in this? What does a health system have at stake with these efforts that you're doing with the community and with law enforcement?
Well, I cannot participate in any project without Lee Memorial's full support. So absolutely, they're 100% behind me, and it's not me. I represent the system. You know, I'm just one of the tools within the system that is, as well as many other people within the health system that are doing the work to create a healthier community for all. So, yes, absolutely, they're 100% behind. And the way I'm looking at it from a social determinant, yes, looking at it from the environment standpoint, when someone doesn't feel safe, when someone doesn't feel comfortable, it's cyclical. It all impacts how that person feels, you know. And, you know, Mr. Streets alluded to some of those aspects and his conversation. So that's why Lee Memorial cares, because we care for the health of our community, but we understand and realize and know that health is not just the physical health. It's also all those other components within the individual holistically, because you can take medicine for this disease, but what about, can you afford it? Economic determinant, can you afford taking it? Maybe you get it, you're able to get one prescription, but can you afford it? Or we can connect you to a doctor's appointment, but maybe you can't go because of your job. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a whole other factor that impacts the person's health and viability in the community, and this is one of them. And so that is why we are involved as a health system.
All right. Well, that is all the time we have for this portion of the program. Thank you so much, Councilman Streets and Yemisi Olorun-Tula-Coates, for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Johnny Streets is a Fort Myers City Councilman and former law enforcement officer with the Fort Myers Police Department. EMSC Olorun-Tula-Coates is Manager of Diversity and Language Services for Lee Memorial Health System. She's also involved in a cultural competency training initiative for law enforcement officers here in Fort Myers. We're taking a short break, but when we return, same-sex marriage was made legal nationwide by a U.S. Supreme Court ruling this summer, just 6 months after Florida's gay marriage ban was struck down. The landmark legal decisions were cause for much celebration among gay and lesbian people and their supporters, but advocates say the fight for equality is far from won. We'll explore why just ahead. Stay with us. You're listening to Gulf Coast Live on WGCU, NPR for Southwest Florida.